all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Tuesday, November 22nd, 11/22 of 22. Nice to have you here on, again, a short week. We'll be here today. We'll be here tomorrow. Off on Thursday and Friday from live shows, and then back at it full time come Monday. We hope, because that's what they're paying me to do. Another beautiful day here on Lake Wissota. Going to get nice today. I'll tell you, one of the perks of living on the river like this is you can be looking out over the lake one moment, in this particular example, while folding laundry. And next thing you see is just zoom. This eagle goes by, not just this bald eagle goes by. This bald eagle goes by sideways, like he's one of the blue angels, you know. Just so I don't know what was in his or her sights, if it was breakfast or if it was just a need to show off. But, you know, you just kind of, that little 1 second thing, the bit of nature reminded you of, you know, some of the nice things you have to keep your eyes out for, no matter where you live. Hey, we're going to be joined this morning by Rebecca Cook, the once and maybe future candidate for Congress, on what rural Wisconsin needs from its new congressional and legislative members and whether she thinks Western Wisconsin is going to get that. There are others who also are not taking much of a post-election break, the billionaires who helped Ron Johnson win re-election. They are already planning to spend big to help former right-wing Justice Dan Kelly get back on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That's our topic at 7:30. Plus, the state budget surplus is even higher. There's even more in there that could provide such a win-win for Republican legislators and Governor Evers, if only the Republican legislators would come to the table in good faith. There's not a great sign of that yet, but again, it's early. The session doesn't start until early January, I'm sorry. And at some point over the next 2 hours, I will try to get on board with the World Cup. I did watch some of the U.S. match against Wales yesterday, and, you know, it was 1-1. So we got that going. Aaron Zomers is here in the producer chair. Were you watching that, Aaron?
I watched part of it. Closer to the end. I was here working for most of it, but yeah, we were ahead for a while.
Yeah. I mean, it was a, you know, good looking goal, but then later in the match, we committed a penalty and, you know, the penalty kick was successful and it led to a 1-1 tie, which is not what the U.S. was hoping and needing to get for this very first game in the World Cup. If you want to reach us, try to, you know, educate me on soccer, 715-388-7155 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. From the Wisconsin State Farmer, which is part of the USA Today network, Thanksgiving dinner is going to cost us all more. We've been hearing about inflation all year long. But even though we're going to be paying more for groceries, almost none of that increase is being passed on to America's farmers. That's according to the National Farmers Union and President Rob LaRue, who notes that corporate profits are going up, consumer prices are going up, but the share of the farmer's food dollar remains low thanks to price gouging by corporate monopolies in the food system. He notes that the Farmers Union will continue to push back against harmful anti-competitive practices, but that multiple waves of mergers and acquisitions over the past couple of decades have resulted in agriculture and food supply chains that are not only uncompetitive and fragile, but also grossly underpay farmers. And I would like you to listen to these examples. I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but I think you're going to figure out where I'm going with this. For turkey, the retail price this year is $1.99 a pound. The farmer's share of that is 6 cents per pound. For sweet corn, if you were to get a 16-ounce frozen package, the retail price would be $2.59. The farmer's share of that is 44 cents. For boneless ham, maybe you get a 2-pound, The retail price for that is just about $13. The farmer's share is $1 of that. For mashed potatoes, and there are a lot of potato farmers across Wisconsin, a five-pound bag, the average retail price this year, $5.99. The farmer's share is $1.30. And finally, apple pie filling, a 21-ounce can, retail price is $5. The farmer's share is $1.03 a pound. And so, so we just want to make sure that people understand that, yes, inflation is high, but as people have been noting throughout the course of the year, so are corporate profits. And there is no massive will, especially on one political side of the aisle, to do anything about that, to do anything about the anti-competitive, near monopoly practices that allow you to be price gouged. And then for those same corporations to plow all manner of money into political ads that get you mad about inflation, but without noting that they are, in fact, a big part of the cause of it. Of course, there's companies that have been affected harshly by the supply chain, but they've also been jacking up prices to a degree more than their increased costs because they've been able to. Because we need more elected officials who have some spinal fortitude on behalf of the consumer and the voter rather than their donors. We'll talk to we'll get some more news coming in our next segment, and then Rebecca Cook coming in at 6:30. This is Up North News Radio for a Tuesday. Talk about the money that's in the state budget surplus and the money that the Chrisleys liked to acquire and liked to show off on their reality show, but you can change the title now to Chrisley Knows Prison Best, based on that story coming up in a bit here. But first, at 6:16, some sports. Giannis scored 37 points, and the Bucks pulled away in the second half to beat the Portland Trail Blazers Monday night, 119-111. Antetokounmpo made 16 of his 24 field goal attempts, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. Milwaukee now improved to 12-4 on the season, 9-1 at home. Bucks guard Drew Holiday scored 13 of his 17 points in the fourth quarter, including a shot from behind the backboard. Holiday opened the quarter with a three-pointer to give the Bucks a lead, and he actually had Milwaukee's first 9 points of the third quarter. The Bucks will host Chicago on Wednesday, tomorrow. The Marquette women's basketball team, we mentioned yesterday that they had knocked off a number 3 ranked team in the nation and had advanced to the finals of the Battle for Atlantis tournament in the Bahamas. They did end up losing, the Marquette women did, to 20th ranked UCLA in the championship game of that particular battle. Well, we mentioned the state budget surplus frequently over the past year, and frankly, should not have to be mentioning it right now. That opportunity that came up during the course of the year, finding out that the state was bringing in more money than expected because of careful and quality management of the state economy, could have been put to work at any point during this year. But the Republican legislature chose not to come back into session, and the money continues to pile up. And Governor Evers' office announced on Monday the state budget surplus is now forecast to hit $6.6 billion by the end of next June, when the current state budget expires. This record high amount of black ink reflects a state economy that bounced back much stronger than expected when the current budget was being written in the spring of 2021. That's the way the state budget works, is that every other year, in the spring, they write a two-year budget that takes effect on July 1st. So this current budget was written in the spring of 2021, a year into the coronavirus pandemic and the resulting economic slump. and projections were made for, you know, when that budget period ends, which would be at the end of June 2023. And it turns out those projections were way off in a good way, that the economy is doing much better than people expected in the spring of 2021. So with that good economy and good management of it, there now are opportunities to right some wrongs and fix some errors in state spending, in the way that state budgets are written and allocated. And during his election campaign, Governor Evers offered some specific plans for the surplus, including $600 million in tax cuts, including a 10% tax cut for households making under $100,000 a year. He also proposed a $2 billion increase in K-12 school funding, and then all sorts of targeted tax breaks for children, for caregivers, for seniors, for veterans, for farmers. And yet Republicans who put themselves on a paid vacation at the start of March never came back into session to put the surplus to work for Wisconsinites. And reacting to the news, the two Republicans who co-chair the legislature's powerful Joint Finance Committee managed to wrongly imply that Evers sees the surplus as a blank check, and they're going to make sure that's not the case. That, again, is a very bad faith argument. The governor and the legislators all know perfectly well that any plan for the surplus and any plan for the next state budget will require both parties to come to an agreement, which is why we keep talking about having this be a win-win. There will be no greater opportunity, I guarantee you this, in our lifetimes, in Wisconsin state government history, there will be no greater opportunity to take a good, hard look at the budget and say, what are the things that we can fix here? Starting with a historical imbalance in what K-12, our neighborhood public schools, are receiving, as opposed to what's going to private, religious, and for-profit schools, and the revenue sharing, the system that is has been just broken and has left local governments starved for resources to continue even basic services, that has even put law enforcement services on the potential chopping block. It's, again, one of those ironic things that the very people on the Republican side who are yelling that some people want to defund the police are, in fact, the very people who want to defund the police. Not that they want to, but their anti-tax, anti-spending zeal has left local governments lacking what they need to provide these basic services. And it's not like the local governments can then hike property taxes at the local level to make up for it. There are these state spending and tax limits that the legislature imposes on school districts and on local governments. And so if they wanted to levy, you know, an additional local sales tax or something like that, they would have to get the legislature's approval. So this is where the legislature and the governor could get creative in a good way, if Republicans wanted to do this. And I need to start by making one thing crystal clear. That $6.6 billion surplus does not all have to be spent to be put to work. I think that there are Republicans and taxpayers that think that what's going to happen here is that the state is somehow going to go on a $6 billion spending spree. When what you can do, remember, that surplus doesn't even include what's been set aside in the rainy day fund, which is coming up on $2 billion additional dollars in there. But that money can be allocated in different ways to give you those structural reforms that are good for the long-term health of state government and the services it provides, and local government and the services it provides. It doesn't all have to go out the door. It can be put to work in such a way that over a period of years, school districts are able to make needed repairs, projects, hire and retain teachers without having to go to voters to hike local property taxes. Infrastructure improvements can continue to be made. Yes, we're getting, more broadband all the time around the state. Imagine how much more could get done, how much faster everybody's internet speeds could be if, again, a long-range plan were set up that would benefit both rural Wisconsin, urban Wisconsin, suburban Wisconsin. And on it goes. I mean, there's just, again, I'm just going to keep talking about opportunity. The opportunity is there. Now, we know that it's not going to come from the leadership in on the Republican side. There's simply too much hay to be made by constantly talking about, shrinking government to the size where you can drown in the bathtub. But I know from my time in the legislature that there are rank and file members who, given the chance, could put something together across the aisle, at least starting with what do we think would be the best possible circumstance for both Republicans and Democrats to put the surplus to work, not just over the course of the next year or 2 years, but over the long term, if need be. Identify that plan, publicize that plan on a bipartisan basis, even though some of your party leaders are going to yell at you. Some of the Republican leaders are going to say, hey, you're making us look bad. There's too much spending in here. And some Democratic leaders will say to these rank and file members, hey, what? Corporate taxes are already too low. Why are you agreeing to another corporate tax cut? Because that's going to be the way to get to an agreement, is that both sides or both parties are going to see something in there that they'd rather not do. But in exchange for what they can get done for Wisconsin, they can put it to work, especially if both sides don't put in poison pills. So long as the parties, again, negotiate in good faith. And I'm not saying I have a lot of confidence in that, but you have to start someplace. And I'm going to start from a place of optimism. In terms of other people who have a lot of money, or at least did, but now their surplus is gone, the reality TV stars Todd and Julie Chrisley. They were sentenced Monday to lengthy prison terms after being convicted earlier this year on charges including bank fraud and tax evasion. U.S. District Judge Eleanor Ross in Atlanta gave Todd Chrisley 12 years in prison. Julie Chrisley got 7 years behind bars, plus some form of restitution to be determined later that they'll have to pay back. The Chrisleys gained fame with their show Chrisley Knows Best, which follows their tight-knit but boisterous family. Federal prosecutors say the couple engaged in extensive bank fraud schemes, then hid their wealth from tax authorities while flaunting their lavish lifestyle. Prosecutors wrote in a pre-sentencing court filing, the Chrisleys have built an empire based on the lie that their wealth came from dedication and hard work. The jury's unanimous verdict sets the record straight. Todd and Julie Chrisley are career swindlers who have made a living by jumping from one fraud scheme to another, lying to banks, stiffing vendors, and evading taxes at every corner. That sounds so much like another family I know that has not yet found out the same fate as Todd and Julie Chrisley. Equally annoying, equally on TV so often, saying that so much of what they did came from hard work, when instead it turned out they were grifters. They were criminals. They were criminals in nice houses. They were criminals in fancy cars, and criminals who, would joke now and then and tried to be just like you and me, but they're not like you and me, because we don't defraud banks. We don't cheat out on our taxes. We pay our fair share. Frankly, we pay more than our fair share because of, again, the millionaires and billionaires who find ways to hide their wealth. And they treat it as a game. And again, to do it so openly, to go ahead and create a reality TV show around you, to have it done, it is the very definition of hiding in plain sight. And that's what these criminals were doing in defrauding banks that then have to turn around and charge higher interest rates to people like you and me. We pay for this crime. We all do. And so nobody should feel bad that Todd Chrisley's getting 12 years. Julie Chrisley's getting 7 years. Elizabeth Holmes was sentenced the other day, even though she's got little kids. And people said, hey, welcome to the American judicial system, where plenty of women, women of color and such, have children too, that they can't take care of because they've done the crime. They have to do the time. So there's not going to be a lot of sympathy here for the Chrisleys. Actually, there's not going to be any at all. Coming up after this break, we're going to talk to Rebecca Cook, former, perhaps future, candidate for Congress, and talk about what rural Wisconsin is going to need in the coming year from the new Congress and the new legislature. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, and don't forget, we also have our question of the week online at our Facebook page. If you scroll down a bit, you'll see a little graphic. And basically, all we're asking you is the same question that voters in Dunn County were asked in an advisory referendum on Election Day. And that is, how do you feel about a national health insurance program? That's all we're going to say. It's a national nonprofit plan that would cover medical expenses for all Americans. And it narrowly passed in Dunn County with 51.5% of the vote. Even though, again, it's a Republican, conservative-led county, so plenty of conservatives know that the system needs fixing one way or another. We want to know your thoughts. You can leave those comments underneath that little graphic asking that question over on the Up North News Facebook page. Rebecca Cook joins us now, former Democratic candidate for Congress, business owner, advocate, and ready basically just to, again, help us talk about rural Wisconsin, what it needs, its value, the things that our elected leaders need to know, and our expectations for such leaders. Some of them are high, some of them are not so high. Good morning, Becca.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you again. Thanks for staying out there and letting people know that they have a voice, for you, especially in that third congressional district where, there's going to be new representation for the first time in 26 years, and you and Brad Paff and Deb Baldus McGrath and Mark Newman all made the case for what things are going to be needed. And Becca, I don't think those needs are going to change at all what people in rural central and western Wisconsin should come to expect from somebody representing them in Congress or the legislature.
Yeah. 1,000%. And I think, one of the things that you saw within the primary election was a robust exchange of ideas. I think as Democrats, we really had an agreeance. We didn't differ too much on the issues themselves. And one thing that I don't think that we've seen from, Derek Van Orden is really an idea of how he's going to lead and what kind of policies he's going to bring forth. If you go to, you were talking about healthcare at the beginning of the segment. If you go to his campaign webpage, his healthcare statement is a sentence long. So I think for us as people that were really participatory in the process of, democracy and this exchange of ideas, I'm really interested to see what kind of leadership we're going to see out of Derek and specifically what he's going to do, because he didn't really lay out a strategic plan within his campaign.
No, he did not. And he did not get to be asked much about that because of what he did. He basically chickened out of almost every opportunity to answer questions from the public. And I said in the wake of that it probably is time to reimagine what these things should look like, because like it or not, more and more candidates are skipping them. To me, there's too many opportunities where people are looking for zingers and gotcha moments. And what we really need is something that's more like a job interview. And so I want to pivot to what you think Democrats and progressives could be doing differently in districts like yours. For me, it would start with, build a better mousetrap in terms of, letting the candidates talk to the people and answer some tough questions. But right. What else has been on your to-do list in terms of thinking about what else can be done by progressives and Democrats around the state, to have better performances in 2024 and beyond.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it starts off at the beginning with recruitment, you know, and thinking about the kind of candidates that we're asking to step up to the plate, to take on running for office. And, you know, in a lot of rural counties, the people that are the current leaders of those counties are, you know, the folks that are working on your manufacturing lines, or the people that are serving your morning coffee, that are teaching your kiddos in school. And I think it starts with asking those folks who are already our leaders to step off the sidelines, and that we're looking more for working class folks that are already really connected within the community, and not just the political community. And so making sure that they have, you know, the resources, the training and support. I was, after not winning the primary, I stepped up to help assembly candidates that were running on down ballot races. And I think we need to be strategic about building a strong bench in rural communities, and that it's not just, the top of the ticket all the time. We have to be building a bench all the way through, which will help the top of the ticket ultimately. So, you know, I think it starts with recruitment. And then I think it also comes back to, how we're connecting with people. There's a great party in infrastructure, but a lot of that, those folks are retired people who are awesome, who have been doing this for years and years and years. But how are we connecting with new folks, and where do we do that? Where are we doing that so that we connect with swing voters and independent voters? And I think that comes down to being, again, really connected within the community, not just going to Jackson County to go to a county party meeting, but going to, a fish fry, county fair, those types of things, and talking to people.
Yeah, it's so important, that public outreach component of it, because it is so easy for any given group of people and any given group to end up in a silo. Yes. and in an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. And it's just very crucial that, we get out and talk to people, not just at debates, but at dairy breakfasts and barbershops and what have you, and to be listeners.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we'll be more successful in connecting with everyday people, because I think there's a lot of folks that feel very disconnected from their elected officials. They don't feel a part of the process because they don't really feel heard, because we're talking inside that kind of cacophony of similar ideas. So
I would not be surprised if over these next 2 years that you and others aren't essentially what's called in British politics, a shadow member of parliament, or a shadow cabinet officer. Basically, the people that are going to listen if Derek Van Orden or Tom Tiffany or other incumbents won't listen to their constituents. And so again, there's a public front facing role that I think you and others have quite an opportunity to play over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be really telling what, Derek Van Orden chooses to do with his position, and I think, with Republicans having the House right now, I see him stepping up to join kind of the radical ranks of his party, aligning himself with the Lauren Boberts of the world, Marjorie Taylor Greene. When you're a representative and you're a leader, you represent all of your constituents. He's somebody that, when I think about Club Q and the tragic shootings in Colorado Springs, we have a gay community here in West Central Wisconsin. And Derek has already displayed hateful rhetoric in the way in which he, entered a Prairie du Chien library and harassed a young librarian about the LGBTQ book selection. And so, I'm interested to see how he's able to serve everybody in the 3rd congressional district and not just people that align with his own interests and his own party interests, because that's what a real leader does.
Yeah, I believe it was Matt Gaetz who somehow has continued to evade criminal consequences despite allegations involving pedophilia. To be retweeting something from him again really showed me that it's not that they're looking to be part of the traditional Republican caucus, but to be part of an extremist caucus that right. is simply looking to make noise for the sake of getting on right-wing media. And again, playing to the base doesn't do you any good in a purple district like the 3rd.
I think that's super true. And I think that a real leader in this district works to connect with people on both sides of the aisle. To me, you know, when your house is, when your party is in power in the house, it's like, how are you building bipartisan relationships? How are you getting legislation passed? What are you specifically going to be doing for the people that elected you to serve them? And I'm curious to see, with such a thin issues page throughout the campaign, an aversion to debates, what Derek actually steps up to accomplish for people, how he really stays connected at a local level with folks in this district and listens to them. So,
Yeah, that will be interesting, you know, to put it mildly. But you know, we're going to talk to you and hear other voices throughout the, you know, third district and other districts across Wisconsin as we move forward in some of those particular areas. You know, you're a small business owner. Talk to me about what, you know, small business owners would like to see in this new Congress and from the legislature, and especially women-owned businesses that might have a different set of needs or legislative priorities. What should we be looking for in order to hold our incumbents accountable?
Yeah, I think some of the things I think about is healthcare access. You know, I'm somebody who's gotten my healthcare through the exchange, and it doesn't cover a lot. It's, you know, catastrophic health insurance. So how are we making healthcare more affordable for those folks that want to step out, you know, and take on being an entrepreneur, which brings a lot of risks and challenges in and of itself. And so how do we expand healthcare coverage where it's, you know, one, more affordable and accessible? I'm somebody that, you know, throughout when I was running on my campaign, also want to see, you know, Medicare expanded, which is not obviously for my age group or demographic, but those are things I think about as like the economic security of seniors and of my parents, and how are they going to age with dignity, you know, while I'm running a small business and that kind of thing. I also think it comes down to, you know, childcare access. I don't have children, but I know a lot of small business owners that do, and that's a real you know, real issue that's tricky, particularly in rural areas where there just, you know, aren't a lot of providers to be found, and then the cost of that. And so thinking about how Congress is going to take on some of those issues, you know, at the Main Street level that that folks are trying to figure out. And that's not just unique to small business owners. That's something I think that all people in the third are, you know, are considering and are trying to figure out, you know, very much on their own. So
we're talking to Rebecca Cook, who after the congressional primary did go to work and help out some legislative candidates as well. So while you will be watching what Derek Van Orden and a Republican-led House of Representatives does, you have been working with assembly candidates, and the legislature continues to be in Republican hands, but the governor's office is in Tony Evers' hands. And as you hear that the state budget surplus has now grown to an estimated $6.5 billion. What kinds of opportunities did you and legislative candidates talk about that hopefully Wisconsin can work toward in the coming year?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that it's going to be interesting, you know, what's really proposed to what to do with that surplus. And, you know, I think some of the things that obviously the Evers administration touted throughout their campaign was fixing the damn roads. So I think that they're going to be continuing to do that work. You know, I'd love to see more investment in public education. You know, I think that the Evers administration, as well as other assembly members, will also really push for that. I think that especially in rural communities, we see really underfunded schools, and that comes at the state level. And I'm interested to see how, you know, hopefully a lot of these Republican members of the assembly go to bat for their communities so that their students have the resources in the classroom that they really deserve.
I was going to say, to wrap things up here, one of the things that I've been doing is really tipping my cap to everybody who put themselves out there and fell short. You know, I certainly know what it's like to lose a couple of elections. It's no fun, but, you know, and not everybody necessarily gets back up on the horse, either as a candidate or just as an advocate. And yet you're right here a couple of weeks later, putting yourself out there as a voice. And it's a fair question why you don't have to do this.
Yeah. You know, I think it's important. And I think part of, I think all of us have a duty as citizens to step up in some capacity. I think we're in very unique times as far as what's at stake with our democracy, and to sit on the sidelines, I don't think is an option for anyone. And so whatever it looks like, and that's something I encouraged a lot of people, you know, especially even working class folks that don't have as much time to volunteer and do all of those things, right? It's as much as having a conversation with your neighbor. It's as much as doing a door shift on a weekend. It's as much as texting some friends, right?
Exactly. And Beck, I'm looking forward to continuing this conversation, and let's bring a few friends in on some of these, and let's talk about these issues throughout the course of 2023. Thanks so much for your visit today. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks so much. You too, Pat.
All right. See you later. All right. Thanks, Becca. And we will wrap up this hour's conversation in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio. All right, welcome back. This is Up North News Radio on a Tuesday. It is 6:50, and here on Lake Wissota, it's 18 degrees, but it's going to be nice, sunny, and I think we're going to be pushing 40, and we'll take that, and we'll look and see if that chance of precipitation is still in the forecast for some travelers on Thursday. Just remember, you know, whenever your travels take you out, whether it's today or tomorrow or at some point over the weekend, remember to bring plenty of patience, especially for those folks who are, shall we say, the worker bees in transportation, whether it's behind the counter for the airlines, people staffing, you know, all the areas of hospitality, the diners, the restaurants, the convenience stores, the hotels. They all have families they'd like to sit down with as well, but they're working for all of us. And so let's just be kind to one another that way. We will not have our usual musical breaks as we talk about this day in history, because we're having some technical difficulties over at the Radio Ranch. And so while they work on that, since we may still be talking to you folks, through social media and through other channels, we'll just prattle on through a few of these. And, you know, once we get Aaron to come back, we might repeat it again. So if you already know the answers, don't give it away. But this is November 22nd. Obviously, it's the most noteworthy historical moment came with the assassination of President Kennedy on this day. And it's almost difficult to believe that it's been 59 years, that next year will mark 60 years since the Kennedy assassination and everything that it brought to this nation from a cultural standpoint. I know that as somebody who likes to sometimes go down the rabbit hole with YouTube, that even with the JFK assassination and then Martin Luther King and then Bobby Kennedy, there were discussions at that point about, you know, why aren't we doing something about the guns? Why are they so readily available when that's not the case in any other country? And sadly, it's a discussion we're still having with so many more people murdered as a result of it. But it has been something that's been in the news for decades now, for six decades. In fact, in high school, joining the high school speech team, my first original oratory was about gun safety, simply because John Lennon had just been murdered. And again, people were talking about how easy it was to get those Saturday night specials, those handguns, and put them to work. And while things have been tried, including red flag laws, as I understand it, and I think I've got the article here someplace, that the shooter in Colorado Springs over the weekend, people would say, well, you know, there are red flag laws, and, you know, he got around those. Well, he got around it in part because one of the municipalities declared itself some kind of a sanctuary from red flag laws, and again, made it easier to get the guns. Looking at the rest of this day in history, in 1961, Bob Dylan recorded a half a dozen songs for his debut album, including Man of Constant Sorrow, which sounds nothing like the version you might hear in the movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? But it's a Bob Dylan version. Of course, it's not going to sound the same as anything you might have heard before. The Beatles are riddled on the This Day in History calendar today. It was on this day in 1963, that fateful day, that the Beatles also released their second studio album entitled With the Beatles, which included hits like All My Loving. In 1968, on this day, the Brewers released what became known, did I say the Brewers? The Beatles. The Beatles released what became known as the White Album, which included Blackbird and Back in the USSR and Obladi Oblada. And there's one more here. Oh yeah, 2010. In 2010, the Beatles were noteworthy for being on the iTunes store finally for the first time. And after just 1 week, they sold over 450,000 albums and over 2 million individual songs. And that's because they basically had been holding back. They were never fans of Apple Computer, thinking that Apple had stolen, you know, the name of their record label, although, again, pretty generic name, said the guy from Up North News, you know, about generic names. And eventually the Beatles and the estate of John Lennon relented, allowed the Beatles to be carried by Apple on the iTunes store. And that was on this day in 2010 that about a week into their appearance, they had sold over 2 million individual songs at, what was it at the time, 99 cents a song, something like that. To the mid-70s we go on this day in history, 1975. KC and the Sunshine Band hit number one on the singles chart with That's the Way I Like It. That held the number one spot for 2 weeks. Pearl Jam's third studio album, Vitalogy. Boy, you can tell who's the Pearl Jam fan here on your radio today, was released on this day in 1994. Notably, it was released on vinyl before CD, making it the first vinyl record on U.S. album charts since the CD first made its appearance. Once they did release it on CD, it became the second fastest selling CD in history. There are some birthdays today. Terry Gilliam, Monty Python fame, born on this day in 1940, so 82 years old today. Billie Jean King, 79 years old today. Stevie Van Zandt, born on this day in 1950, so 72 years old. Jamie Lee Curtis, 64 years old today. And actor Mark Ruffalo was born on this day in 1967. So again, there's our historical notes for the day. And we again appreciate your patience with us as we handle some technical matters. And then we'll be more musical about our segments here, you know, in the future, once we get all the bells and whistles figured out here. In our next hour, we're going to talk to Sachin Chetta, who is a senior advisor to one of the state Supreme Court candidates, Janet Protasiewicz. And we're going to talk just basically about the importance of that next state Supreme Court race, not just for the candidate that he's working for, but from the entire standpoint of, you know, the future of the court, and whether that seat that's coming open in April can be purchased, essentially, by the same billionaires who helped Ron Johnson buy his way to re-election with millions upon millions of dollars in ads scaring people about crime and somehow making it feel as if Ron Johnson was going to have a plan to fight crime. Or maybe it was never about that. Maybe it was simply about scaring people or having them look suspiciously at Mandela Barnes for being different. And as a result, Ron Johnson was able to win. Well, those same billionaires are going to be helping right-wing former Justice Dan Kelly try to get back on the state Supreme Court. And we will be talking to Sachin about that in about a half hour. Also, in political news, the Secretary of State's race in Wisconsin is over. The Republican challenger, Representative Amy Laudenbach, conceded defeat on Monday in her bid to unseat longtime incumbent Doug La Follette. It looks like La Follette defeated Laudenbach by 7,442 votes, or 0.3%. So again, don't say your vote doesn't matter, because the Republicans came that close to taking the Secretary of State's office, and had Tim Michaels won as well, there would have been some big and not good changes to how elections are run in Wisconsin. We'll have more in our next hour. This is Up North News Radio.